Welcome into the Camel Call Podcast with Evan Budrovich, Campbell University's Director of Social and Digital Media Strategy and Play-by-Play Guy, and joined by Play-by-Play Guy and Campbell Broadcasting Producer Lyndall Suggs. I am Chris Haymeyer, the Senior Associate AD of External and Play-by-Play Guy, and the only guy without a Campbell degree on this podcast.
We have fun name tags. Like, you got to think about the name, the title, the acumen. This would be some elite name tags.
I've been promoted a little bit from student intern, you know?
Darn right. Thank you so much for joining us and for tuning in. We have not been together for a while. It is great when we can get everybody together for the podcast. Zach Burley on assignment right now. But one of the things about trying to get four very busy dudes together during the season on a podcast is we don't have a lot of time to all come together. So it's good that we got it. And we have a whole lot to catch up on. So we are going to go from March all the way through. So buckle up. And we're going to jump right in with our Campbell baseball team. As we tape this on Wednesday, hump day, our Campbell baseball team is about to start the CAA tournament down in Charleston. They are the third seed in the tournament, which regardless of what happens next, Chris Marks, the head coach in his first year here at Campbell, has done a remarkable job. This is a team that lost 23 in the offseason to either graduation or the portal, and they've had numerous injuries on top of that. I mean, literally, they had their starting catcher playing second base a good majority of the end of this year. They were on their sixth second baseman. It is amazing that they were one of the top six teams to even qualify for the CAA tournament, let alone finishing third in the conference.
And a great series win over the number two seed, UNCW. They also were one of two teams to beat Northeastern, who's won 20 straight coming into the tournament. You noted as well the challenges of coaching change, injuries. I mean, second base was a roulette of who was going to play every night. Coach Marks' ability to also legitimize the pitching staff down the stretch and get three straight series wins to end the year, that was kind of the undoing of Campbell last year. They started slow against Delaware, had to sweep William & Mary late. We were in the position kind of flipped of you win one, and they are very impressive in those first two games to win the series. What I like, too, is there's less pressure on this team. It's not five straight championships. It's a team that has a legitimate ace and has great hitting. A healthy Dalen Thompson helps a lot, too. I mean, seeing him on senior day was fantastic. Local kid, we've talked about him a bunch, but his family, they've been great supporters as well. And like seeing them all together on the field and the matching shirts, I think this program's exceeded expectations, which that was a huge question. Could they do it? And clearly Marks has shown he can build a program.
Yeah, I think exceed expectations is probably the best way to put it. When you think about what they came in with and then what they dealt with throughout the season, I mean, it's so interesting to see. In all sports, really, all coaches find a way to battle that adversity that has been given to them. And like Coach Mark, like any great coach would, he doesn't make excuses for the injuries that he's seen. He knew his guys had to play clean going down the stretch. They had to win a couple of games. But those two series early, the UNCW and the Charleston series, really came back to help them in the end. And then, of course, now with the way that Northeastern is looking, that run rule win on a Sunday looks really, really good on your resume.
Yeah, you make a fantastic point. The boys, you know, they ended up winning pretty much every series down the stretch, including the last four. And what I like about it, too, you said Northeastern is the runaway favorite of this CAA tournament. They're a legit top 25 team that is most likely going to get an at-large bid, no matter if they win the tournament or not. They lost two conference games. The last conference game that they lost was the second conference series of the year to Campbell right here on this
field. Does that mean we're going to Boston next year, the tournament?
If it's the winner of the tournament this year has changed, just like in softball in the CAA, in baseball, because of the unbalanced schedule, not everybody plays everybody. They award next year's tournament to the winner of the CAA.
Well, you know what? If someone's got to lose, I guess this is the year for OPS2 to lose. But that's a long trip to Boston.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And I want to go back to something that Evan said. When you think about this team, also put into perspective, last year, Coach Justin Hare's final year here before he got the job at Ohio State, they lost 22 players to the portal or graduation. They had a bunch of injuries. They did not qualify for the CAA tournament. And on paper, they had a little bit more. So Chris Marks exceeded in a rough year what his predecessor did before him. And of course, you know, Coach Hare with all of the championships and that he had the 1 year that was a blip. But that just shows you Coach Hare couldn't get a team into the CAA tournament with the adversity that he faced last year. And Chris Marks did, which makes you even more excited for the future.
It speaks to the depth of the program and the tradition of the program. Yeah. I mean, we see Tommy Harrington making his debut with the Pirates this spring. That all started under Hare, and Marks was a huge part of that in the recruitment of Neto and in the development. But what he did transforming this whole team, this roster that a month in we kind of went, oh boy,
yeah,
it could be very up and down. You lose a series to a MAC school, and then you beat UConn, right, who's mm-hmm. going to probably make the tournament. You win a game here, you lose a game there. They were so Jekyll and Hyde. But then the consistency in conference, and that Duke win now looks very impressive. Yeah. Here at home when they run rule Duke, they've shown that in moments they're very good, which I think is promising because this fan base, I mean, I run the Facebook account for our Campbell University account. Nothing makes them happier than a win over ECU, mm-hmm. Duke, or NC State.
Yeah.
And the fact that Marks gets two or three of those wins a year, that is your bucket list item right there.
And I think you have to give credit to what he was able to recruit coming into the year. I think both of our, you know, Diamond Sport coaches had a little bit of a lull trying to come in to recruit when they got in with the way that the portal works now. But I really think one of the unsung, there's a few unsung heroes of the portal, but one of them has to be Darnell Parker Jr.
Yeah.
And what he's been able to provide at shortstop and then taking as many hit by pitches as anyone in the country in the box, like what he's been able to provide defensively gives them the spark kind of offensively. So that goes to show, again, like you said, the future of guys that you're able to get in, building off of that tradition and history of what Campbell has been able to put into the league and put into the minor leagues and then being successful at this level. It just looks different in the CAA. The Big South, you're the big dog. You're a big fish in a small pond. Here it looks a little bit different because there's a lot of big fish in this one pond. And so,
hey, and High Point didn't even win the Big South this year. Upstate did. So suck at High Point. Couldn't even win the league with nobody good in it.
Yeah, little point, by the way.
I don't think you can say that on a podcast. We'll go back and edit that out. Clean up the language. I know it's been a long time, Evan, but let's clean it up. Anyway, you can watch the entire tournament, Double M Nation down in Charleston on Flow Sports, Flow College. And if we make it to the championship series, we'll have a free audio coverage for you on GoCamels.com and the Varsity Network. Okay, to our other Diamond Sport, softball. And folks, you could say almost the exact same thing about our softball team. First-year head coach, Emily Carasone, she got the job very late. So late, the portal had closed when she took over Campbell softball. So she inherited a team fully. Nobody that she recruited out of the portal or out of high school. It was a team that lost 14 to the portal or graduation, including the entire starting infield and the winningest pitcher of all time in Bella Smith, who went to national champion Oklahoma. And all that Carasone did was have her team in first place in the CAA for most of the regular season and finishing runner-up in the CAA tournament. An equally, if not more, incredible job.
And to be on your home field to win one on the final day, like if you told Emily that in September when she started, late August, she would take that 100 times out of 100. Sure, you want things to go better in the tournament final, but to beat Elon, to then beat Delaware, to set up that positioning, right, we worked so hard last year to earn the home field and all the things that unfold that way, like that is the perfect way for your season to culminate to a make-or-break moment. Yeah. And how many times in softball has this team won those moments, right? We've been spoiled the last 5 years with beating Longwood twice on a championship day, going to Presbyterian winning tournaments. Like, those things don't always happen. Mm-hmm. And the fact we're in that spot now, five of the last, I guess even last year, 6 years straight, you play for a conference title. That speaks to the program itself.
And don't discount the regular season. Let's put that into context, too. They are in sole possession of first place until the last two weekends of the season. And the only reason you can probably say that they lose and don't have a share is because two of your best hitters, Tyra Parker, who had a career year in her senior year, goes out in that game versus Duke and misses the entire series versus Charleston, in which you get swept, and then misses, you know, the first game in which you drop in the last weekend of the year versus Elon. And then Maddie Ford is also gone as well, your starting catcher. So we're piecemealing it at the end, still trying to figure it out. Got into the four spot, and like the baseball team, they got hot at the right time. but sort of fizzled out in the conference championship game. And again, it's almost reminiscent if you watch the game of kind of what happened with the women's basketball team this year, of some nerves at the end kind of maybe you can say took them out of it or a little bit. But you have to realize the amount of pressure that the entire every team in this department is facing to be the first to win the championship and go to the NCAA tournament as the first one in the CAA. So I think all of that plays an amount of pressure on it than just the way that, you know, college athletics works nowadays.
Yeah. And you said it exactly right. Those injuries prevented them for what would have been their fifth straight regular season title, tying what baseball did just a couple of years ago. And then injuries during the tournament to their pitching staff. They really had nothing left at the end pitching wise, but to get that team to that place, just incredible. Our golf teams continuing to roll the women's golf team in at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. And that's something you really have to stop. And I don't want to say we take for granted, but the fact that there is a Campbell program that repeatedly gets at-large bids to the NCAA tournament. They were in the top 50 again this year, went to a regional for the 14th time in the last 15 years, 14 times in the last 15 years. Campbell Women's Golf makes it to the NCAA tournament, and they did it again this year. And on the men's side, a men's team that was clawing and fighting, led a good 2 days in that CAA tournament, just didn't have enough experience at the end under very tough conditions up in New Jersey. They were able to set Hendrick Belke, who was the Big South Freshman of the Year, rounded it off. He won the individual championship and went to the tournament. So 16 straight years where Campbell Golf has a representative in the NCAA tournament.
Poor baby Hank got no help with the weather in Lynchburg. That was awful.
Oh, terribly.
But to the both teams' credit, the women specifically, their dominance in the Big South was unprecedented. The amount of stroke differential, they've moved to the CAA and have continued as a top 50 program. Now, sure, last round of the tournament, they come up just a bit short. There's no stroke play. There's no match play in women's golf in the CAA. That was the time last year Campbell overcame that and won the match play championship. I don't view it as a bad season at all for women's golf.
Nope.
They're able to do back in the top 50, have three freshmen, two on the all-conference team. Crooks is a consistent recruiter and developer with his Schmuckers, little Uncrustables, and then he gets the kids and he gets them all fired up. I will say for Matt Moot and that program, that was a team that needed some development, and he did a great job revamping that roster.
Absolutely.
Changed his lineup entering the year. They played very well down the stretch and had a lead on the final day of the tournament. So what they were able to do is regain the stature as a team that can be a tournament team every year. And that's important, too. I mean, Keith Hill's across the street. It's a great golf course. But when you have two signature programs that, I mean, wrestling a few years ago, but here's golf consistently top 50. And there's probably only a handful of sports that can say that on this campus, and golf's one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Our tennis teams bouncing back this year, their second year in the CAA, including our women's team. They really overcame so much diversity. They flipped that roster. They ended up qualifying for the CAA tournament. And track and field, the same, which the coaching change, a little bit of a philosophy change on that. Some really good individual results from outdoor track and field. A team that lost so much, had some injuries, but they were able to get a couple of individual winners at last week's CAA championships, and then they'll be representative in the regionals again.
Yeah, I mean, it like you said, philosophy change is probably the best way to put it, going from in years ago, it was the distance that got Campbell through, having all the great distance runners. And then with the change with Coach Givens coming in and focusing on the sprints, which really put Campbell on a different national level and a different limelight socially and in other ways like that. It has become now leaning on your strengths of what you have. Campbell doesn't have the sprint program that they used to. So now it is leaning on what your field events can do, and that's what's going to propel them really far. Reagan Wise broke the pole vault record four separate times. He set it and then broke it four times, twice at the NCAA championship. So taking home that first for him, that's Campbell has never had a strong men's pole vaulter in many, many years. And so him doing that has been really impressive. And then to Cora Gaskins, who had faced a lot of injuries into last year and into this year, overcoming that and qualifying for the regional. And then Mikai, who has the best shot of anyone of getting to nationals. Kid's just flat out fast. Qualifying in both the 110 high hurdles and then the 200 probably being the stronger of the two events. He has probably the best chance to make it the farthest in the postseason this year. So what Coach Darm is doing, figuring out what he has and changing the philosophy in the ever-changing landscape that college athletics is for the next few years, it's going to be interesting to see when the dust settles kind of how the program shakes in a different way.
Absolutely. Rounding out the spring sports, women's lacrosse, the record looks similar to last year, but when you look closer, and we told you this last year, the CAA was going to be an upgrade in a whole lot of sports, pretty much across the board. In women's lacrosse, it's one of the best women's lacrosse leagues in the entire country. Two teams this year in the top 25 from the CAA. Campbell lost a lot of close matches in conference. They looked really, really good. More importantly, they looked really, really competitive this year.
Yeah, when you watch, I think you said closer look is different, right? Like 50-50 games was the bugaboo for this Campbell team. I don't know how many they lost by, you know, 1-3 goals, but it just seemed like every loss it was one to three goal differential, when last year they were being blown away by teams. This year they seemed a lot more competitive. I mean, if you even take a look at the Duke game that they played here, that game was a lot more competitive than people thought it would be when Duke came in, you know, ranked high in the top 25. So I think that program is set on the right direction. Don Easley is figuring out the CAA. We know what she could do in the Big South and how they were able to handle that program. So it's going to be interesting to see what it looks like, you know, next year and the year after to take some more steps.
Hats off to Roza Welsh and Sam Bischoff and Jocelyn Hamber. Yeah. Like, that senior class is the last of the COVID group, right? And that's a group that competed for a conference title. That's a group that elevated academics at lacrosse, fantastic GPAs. It's also a group that overcame a lot of changes with, you mentioned the league, you mentioned some of the future of lacrosse in terms of funding nationally, and they've handled it like champions. Mm-hmm. And they've shown that adversity can hit them and they don't decline. You know, yes, is the goal always to win championships in every sport? Of course. But what they've done is sustainability, great alumni base, 15 years as a program now, and they have a future for the next 15 that I think is built on what the senior class did.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point you made. In the spring, we did not see, and baseball still to come, we did not see trophies, but we saw teams being competitive, and competitive as in, you know, competing with the top of the conference and nearly winning a couple as well. And what the Diamond Sports, you know, had to overcome and still do good. You really, really like the future. And speaking of the future, the Creek is studying for the 24-25 academic year. Campbell set an all-time single-year departmental GPA mark, a 3.261 average GPA, and that is across all 21 sports and over 500 student-athletes. It gets even better. This semester alone, the spring semester, 3.301. 20 of the 21 sports had cumulative team GPAs of 3.0 or better, including the swim team that gets this. The swimming team posted a 3.849 team. This is a team, an average. There are a lot of swimmers on the team.
You know, Lendl, you and I just graduated from Campbell.
I mean,
plus. Neither of us had 3.8.
No,
five.
Right?
Five teams achieved new single semester high GPAs, including football, men's golf, softball, swimming, and volleyball. We will get to football and their schedule coming up because we have a lot of stuff to do with the winter sports. But football, an over 3 GPA for the first time in their history. It just goes to what Coach Braxton Harris has done. You know, the culture off of the field as well as on has changed, and that was currently one of the many good things that happened academically.
When you think of the selling points of the CAA, the biggest in my eyes is the academic and university profile. Being in R1 research institutions like Hofstra, like Stony Brook, like Towson, and what Campbell has done both with these academic partnerships. Now the universities can have collaborative meetings, they can share information. And then two, our athletes have performed at a high level academically. That matters in a league like this. You look at NCA&T, very great historical HBCU. UNCW, highly renowned school in this state, Charleston. Campbell now fits the profile of that conference in ways in your neighborhood you compare yourself to your neighbors. Our previous neighbors were fine. They were okay. They weren't going to go to a party and impress anybody. Now we can go to the party and say, this is a group of individuals and like-minded schools that we connect with. And I think performing well in the classroom helps, yeah, too. We're not the low-hanging fruit right in the thick of this league.
Absolutely.
And even around the profile of name recognition, I didn't mean to cut you off, but even around name recognition, like when you go up north, people know who Hofstra is. They know what Stony Brook has been able to do. When you look at sort of the mid-Atlantic, people know about a William and Mary, and they know about a Towson and things like that. And then, of course, when you come down south, everybody knows who A&T is and what Elon can do, and especially a UNCW, and don't forget a Charleston, you know, just in South Carolina. So it elevates everything, and seeing that not only have we been able to take the step on the field of play, but in the classroom, that's a big jump too, because you see a lot of schools will go to a new conference and then flail.
Yeah, and tip of the cap to all of the coaches that make sure that that's a priority. Hannah Bazemore in this administration, and then Jared Fries and his academic support staff, just incredible. Because again, to get that many students and teams in line with the same vision, it's just some incredible numbers. We dip into the winter. The last time we were able to get all together was February, so a lot to wrap up in what was a really a sensational winner and one of the best ever.
Summer season, I forgot that.
No, we did not.
Barely.
We did not at all. It was the longest crossover season ever featured 20 of 21 baseball games at home. But we'll get to that. That'll be the Camel Call After Dark podcast that comes out on one of the other ones. Anyway, wrestling. A share of the regular season title. They got back to trophy land. They only qualified three for the national tournament this year. Again, other injuries for them that really had plagued a couple of teams, but another solid year for them. On the hardwood, what a unbelievable job. We've been talking about these coaches and the great job that they did. Ronnie Fisher's job this year with the Campbell women's basketball team, one of his youngest teams ever. He knew he was going to have to rely on a lot of freshmen. He had no transfers, one of four teams in the country that didn't bring in anybody from the portal. All he did with that young team was get them to a 22-13 overall record, 12-6 in the CAA. Campbell finished third in the conference, made it all the way to the CAA tournament championship game, and then picked up a win in the WNIT tournament postseason as well.
It's a good coastal club, too.
And just an unbelievable job on a team that really, on paper, and I say this again, on paper, shouldn't have competed for a conference title, shouldn't have competed for the top half of the conference, quite frankly.
Well, I think the thing about women's basketball is you saw a philosophy change with Coach Fisher. Having Paris Smith go down that early before the season even started, he knew he had to do something completely different, probably something that he never had done with the portal being closed and all this other stuff. We saw the emergence of a Courtney Dahlquist, who only played three games the year before, didn't really get much playing time, but become one of the team's best shooters. Dare I say, in a single season, her single season probably ranks really, really high in Campbell women's basketball history, what she has been able to do. Plus having a Gemma Nunez, who I don't know how she didn't get first team all CAA, but she really was the extension of Coach Fisher on the floor. Like, he didn't have to do much because she understood what needed to be done offensively and defensively. And coming in, you know, Evan and I said it early in the season, was the concern was going to be inside. Was this team going to be able to hang around the rim? I think they shot themselves into positions where they couldn't hang around the rim.
And that win against Charleston was impressive in the semis, because Charleston came here at the last
absolutely
game and yeah, absolutely shellacked Campbell. And that was one of those, is this too good to be true? And then their resolve and their response. I think it actually ties in with Ronnie's kids. So two of his three kids got married this past summer. It was a renaissance for Fisher. You experience love. You experience this new philosophy. And he changed his mindset, right? He went from rigidity and playing the four out
Now, with
one end.
Now, is this just Evan Budrovich thinking of why he changed everything because of the wedding? Or
I got married and two of Ronnie's kids got married.
All right.
But, I mean, the important part is that Ronnie changed his philosophy after 25 years of coaching. And clearly it responded well. I mean, you're within 2 minutes of winning that championship. I think, too, to Lendl's point, it showed that Ronnie, his ability to retain, develop, and build these classes is huge. And in a culture where people leave and move and change, his culture is paramount to this success.
Because I believe both checking his three fantastic freshmen, two of which made the all-freshman team, the others should have as well. I mean, they basically had the same numbers. They are all coming back next year, correct?
All of the Jasmine Felden's back, Sierra Alexander's back, and Olivia Tucker is back next season. And then you get, you know, possibly someone from North Carolina who was a really, really good high school basketball player. Then you bring in another point guard to see what this team can be. So I think next year in the CAA, we saw 2 years ago, it was Stony Brook, I believe, that just ran away with everything in the CAA. I think there's another year of parity in the conference. Maybe Charleston rises above the fray as the conference favorite coming into next season. But I think the parity really benefits Campbell because nobody is going to count them in with what they have coming back because they're missing a really big piece in Jimmy Nunez. But it's going to be interesting to see. I believe that this team will figure it out just like they figured it out this coming season, this past season, rather.
Absolutely. Just an unbelievable job, which brings us to men's basketball. A roller coaster ride, you hear that to describe a lot, but if you weren't along for the ride, it ended up with Campbell hiring new head coach John Andrzejczyk, their fourth head coach in the last four decades, which is something that we could spend a whole other podcast on, but a coach who they hired, and then a couple weeks later he went on to win a national championship with Florida as an assistant. But before all of that, it's a Campbell team that was a bit of an underwhelming 7-11 overall, 2-3 in conference. And then they went on a streak. They won seven straight games, most of them by double digits. They beat William & Mary by 30 points. Gore Arena started to fill up again. In game six of that run, one of their best players, Jason Sinani, a guy that transferred in here but has been here for 3 years, great on and off the court, a glue guy, but a guy that can do a little bit of everything. He broke his leg, gruesome in-game accident.
It's been really neat to see him walk around campus the last few
And that's what I was going to add. By the way, if you haven't been keeping up with Jason, he was walking with a boot about a month after that accident. He was walking without a boot about 2 months after, and he was walking his dog around campus yesterday.
Okay, so at the game after he broke his leg was the NCANT game, and that one was obviously on CBS Sports Network, but we had it on the radio. So I don't know if you guys have heard the ambulance locker room story or not during that game.
Oh, no.
So Jason breaks his leg. Obviously, you know, gameplay stops for a little while. Ambulance takes a little while to get there. And then once he gets on, they finally get him some medication. They end the half because it was closer to the end of the first half. The half ends. Both teams go into the locker room. Jason calls his teammates from the ambulance to encourage them to continue to keep going. Because as you know, like you said, he was a big, big piece of this basketball team this past year. And so being the glue guy that he is, cares about the culture, caring about his guys, he called them to continue going and then showed up in a full cast for their next game, which just happened to be that Monday, to support his guys. So I think the biggest what if about this past season that will probably be up there in the history of all of them is, what if Jason Sinani never gets hurt? If Jason Sinani never gets hurt, how far does this team actually go? Because they were, like you said, Chris, they were bludgeoning teams. They beat William & Mary that past week. They were up by 23 on Hofstra at halftime in the next game that next Saturday. So what happens if he never gets hurt?
And it's really interesting, by the way, to put a bow on Jason Sinani, who, again, he was that supportive, went on road trips, and again, uncomfortable and very much all that. He ended up getting Mr. Campbell, which at the Cammies is given to someone that's so great on and off the court, really the highest award you can get as a Campbell athlete. And that's a great point that you make, because a week later, after the accident, they were able to win the next game, but Campbell lost six of their last seven, including five straight, a first-round exit again in the CAA tournament. And it was lining up to be, you know, Campbell will prove it on the court, because Campbell, again, they weren't just beating teams, they were beating a lot of teams, but it was lined up at the end of the year. They were going to play the three teams that were the top three teams in the conference, all three teams that had beaten them, including Charleston and UNCW that went along to beat it. So unfortunate of that part of it, but what we did see during the run was the Campbell community, for the first time since before COVID and when Chris Clemens was a senior, fill into Gore Arena. They had a hot team. They had an exciting team. They had a team that was winning that they could cheer about again. And we saw the community really come out. It was the biggest crowds that we had in that month of February than we had since Chris Clemens.
It gave you a taste of what could be and what's to come, right? And Andershek has been very clear about tapping into that excitement and bringing that energy and bringing that emotion. And I mean, let's be honest, our fans feed off the energy of our players and our coaches here at Campbell. This is not a place that, you know, has deep-rooted, every cheers planned out every minute of the game. Like, it feeds off the environment. And when the environment's investing into Campbell, Campbell invests back into them. And that's where this hire for Andershek, I think, is so exciting, because he understands that and can build what's already started.
And I think, too, to go to that environment building on top of each other, I think the style of play that's coming in will ignite that as well. What he wants to do is more of a modern style of basketball that excites people. Long range threes, easy dunks inside, getting out in transition, playing tough defense. What you've seen at Florida that was exciting to watch, that got them through, you know, what was a hectic final 2 minutes in the national championship game. That stuff is what excites people, because they want to see the moment. They want to go on the run. They want to cheer for the three. I mean, even in high schools nowadays, a long range three ends with the crowd yelling boom. So it's one of those things where I think this coming season, no matter how it shakes out, excitement around the program and what they're able to do has people's and their attentions glued on Buies Creek.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the season, Coach McGeehan's contract was not renewed. So after 12 years, it was over. And then you went on to, okay, what's coming next? The really good news, and full disclosure, I was involved in the head coach hiring process. There was a lot of high-level interest on this job. Former Division I head coaches, current Division I head coaches, high-level Power Four assistants, including Andershek. So first and foremost, the amount of interest in this job was so much better, so much greater than the pool that they were able to choose from when McGeehan took this job back after that 2013 season. So first and foremost, and then the choice here, 33-year-old John Andershek, assistant and the defensive coordinator for those Florida Gators. Remember, he was hired before he won the national championship. So he was in the mix. It was their first round. They were coming here to Raleigh before they had even won a game in the NCAA tournament this year. He was hired, and then Campbell was able to see this ride, which was incredible, because Campbell got a lot of love because every time they talked about Florida, they talked about him. He was able to play the first and second round up here in Raleigh, and it really did so much for him. People felt like they got to know him before he was even officially introduced here. He is from the Kyle Smith coaching tree, and if you didn't know much about it, you will know the teams if you don't know him. Kyle Smith, the guy that won at Columbia University, then San Francisco, then Washington State, now he's at Stanford. One of the very, very cool things about that coaching tree, and one of the big reasons why he was hired, all of those places are very different places, but they aren't basketball blue bloods. They are places that aren't the probably sexiest as far as towns or facilities in their conferences, and there are places that did not have much basketball winning tradition before Kyle Smith came here. They do it with analytics. They do it with recruiting all over the world. And it's been proven to work, not just Florida, because that is a different place with a different set of NIL money and a different set of things. But they've done it at these other places. And he is a big part of that. And he's a big part of that system to get to win wherever you are.
I like the 33-year-old part of it.
Honestly,
I think the energy, his infectious nature, even at the press conference and at some of the other things he's popped around with, like he gets this is his first big shot as a head coach and he's embraced that. And I think at times with the previous regime, we'd see it in moments and not all the time, right? Yeah. And it would be revamped and re-energized. Like with him, we don't have to worry about investment and interest and excitement. He's going to put his best foot forward. He may not be here 15 years. Mm. I'm just going to be frank. And that'd be good for Campbell, good for him. But the fact that he wants to be here and develop it and grow it, like that's a big part of this job that you need to make this your priority. And he's certainly doing that.
I think if you look at his hires and who he's brought in, he's young. He does have experience from student manager and every other part that you can hold in a Division I program and up, except for head coaches, his first head coaching gig. But he surrounded himself with a wealth of knowledge. And I think that's important, too, to have that balance to where you're young, you're ambitious, you've seen everything that you could possibly see at this age for yourself. But now you're in a space to where you know you don't know everything. So yep. I think that's a good sign of a head coach to know, hey, I don't have this level of experience because I just haven't been around the game as long as a guy who's probably maybe been coaching as long as I have or has played at Division I basketball and seen different things. So his hires not only show that he's confident in what he can do, but he's willing to be balanced out to give the best product on the floor.
Yeah, that's a great point. His first hire really told you what he values and what I think is really going to help him. Landry Kosmalski, former Division III National Coach of the Year at Swarthmore. He had the team in the national championship game. He had coached there for 13 years. That was really wise, showing his wisdom of exactly all those things that you said. And then he's filled around it other guys from the coaching trees at the different stops that he's had, young and vibrant. And again, Campbell got...
And Austin Burnett. I mean, at Campbell.
Absolutely. The one that was not, the only one that was really not in his tree or he had coached with before or really, really knew was Austin Burnett. And that was a great hire, a Raleigh guy who was here during the Chris Clemens era.
And to bring someone back like that who understands the landscape, because you come in with a wealth of knowledge. Now, obviously, Pullman, Washington is very similar to Buies Creek, but it's not the same. And so because that is the case, you want someone who has been here, who understands things and can get you into the culture and get you to understand that, but also comes with the necessary experience and wealth of knowledge that you're looking for in a coach. And so I think he brings both of that. He is what I would call the bridge of the gap between the old and the new, and pulling. He's like the perfect bow on top. Like this pulls everything together, and this is what this staff can be. And I'm excited about what they can do.
Excitement, indeed. Stay tuned. We think next week we will be able to air it. John Andrzejczyk sat down with us for a long conversation. We're going to put that on the podcast probably next week as we're putting it together. And it's the whole story. It's the This Is Your Life of Coach John. Also, we're going to be bringing him around the state on a coach's camel caravan. So look for the announcement for that coming up in the upcoming weeks as well. It'll give you an opportunity to come out and to meet him. So a lot of excitement going on. You go to GoCamels.com and you can see all of the players he's bringing in. Now, look, it's what I said about and what we said about Coach Braxton Harris for football and what we said about our coaches in track and our coaches in baseball and our coaches in softball. In this portal era, John Andrzejczyk got here 2 days after winning the national championship, and he had five players in his gym, two of who had played before. So this is going to be a team that he has put together through the portal, and it's going to be a give him time to get up to speed and get his system. And all of these other places, they did not win right away. They won, and they won big in a couple of years, but you're definitely going to have to give them some time. But support is what they need.
Well, and how about, too, like Chris Fields Jr., Norfolk State, he just signed a few days ago, played him in the first round of the tournament, fell in love with the tape, watched the analytics. Like, to have that versatility to go, hey, I'm going to poach from a program that in the past would never have transferred to Campbell.
Yep.
To some in the past, that would be considered a neutral or a step down. He sold the value. He sold the playing opportunity and sold himself and gets kids from other programs that other would never have considered Campbell. Think about the profile of athlete we get in the portal typically to who we get now. And that speaks to what John has brought to this program.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
You got Lendl in the portal.
Well, we did. Kind of. We did. We will.
From the ROTC program. That was a heck of a poach.
We will turn the page to football, but first, listen to this very well-done advertisement with our head football coach, Braxton Harris.
Hey, Camel fans. This is Braxton Harris, and I've got one question for you. Are you ready for game day? Well, get your game face on, because Campbell's 2025 football season is here. We're bringing the energy, the grit, and the passion, and we want you to be right there with us. But hey, game day is just the beginning. You want to make a real impact? Then it's time to step up and join the Fighting Camel Club. Being a part of the Fighting Camel Club means you become the team behind the team, fueling scholarships, training, and academic success for not just our football athletes, but all 21 of our sports. When you join, you're not just a fan, you're a game changer. So what do you say, Camel Nation? Let's make a difference together. Join the Fighting Camel Club today and help us build champions on the field, in the classroom, and beyond.
And Braxton Harris will be on a couple of the Camel Caravan stops as well, so make sure you look for that. It is going to be one heck of a football schedule this year, the best that we've ever had. And again, I'll point back to the fact that previously in previous conference, before we were scholarships, home games would be Butler and Valparaiso and Morehead State and Charleston Southern. This year, non-conference, Furman and Western Carolina. The conference games, Bryant, New Hampshire for homecoming, and then William and Mary and Elon. Elon, William and Mary, Western Carolina, and Furman all coming here to play in Buies Creek. One of the many reasons. You're right. And our old friend Bill Priestley, now a professor at Vanderbilt, he was a Furman grad. FU will be here.
Say that.
We can't say that. We can say that. Furman University will be here, but it's going to be an exciting and, again, a very challenging schedule as Braxton Harris continues to rebuild this program.
I remember when we announced, because Furman was one of the dates, this was 2017, and we were making the move from non-scholarship to scholarship, and myself and Bill Preuss were working on this animation of all the future opponents, and the one that stood out was Furman because Bill went there. I mean, here it is 8 years later, and that game comes to fruition. Yeah. The NC State game was part of that initial announcement at ECU for twice in 3 years. That'll be a big rallying cry for the local area. Like, I love, too, that now with Florida next year and some others, like, you're seeing the fruits of that PFL scheduling, Ricky Ray and Jason Williams and others now getting to the big boy scheduling and seeing what real college football is like. Like, these cultural games matter to A&T and Elon and William & Mary and us. And, you know, this will be our last chance of William & Mary. But as others come in the league and you build that culture, and now there's true rivals, where previously it was, no offense, Gardner-Webb and Davidson and schools that didn't have the full investment in football. And now we're with our peers in that sense.
Yeah, it's going to be you want to talk about like fan investment and travel and who's going, coming to a stadium and things like that. That's going to be interesting to see, because you get different games of, you know, when you were in that hodgepodge year, the last year in the Big South, of a Bryant who comes in, like, why the heck are they in the Big South? Like, they're coming in and they don't have any travel. Nobody's really invested in their football like that to make the trip down to North Carolina, where you've got a Furman who's a short ride away. You've got Western Carolina, who is probably going to send a lot of people, one, because they're a good team. They have been for the last few years. But, oh, by the way, that's a revenge game for them. That's Braxton Harris's first to win. They were ranked 17th when they lost that game. And then, of course, you have your local rivals, the Elons and different things like that, the William and Mary who travels. Being in a football conference where people have great and strong football tradition and history, it not only elevates your program, for you might see some short term struggles in trying to figure out, you know, play on the field and getting acclimated to a really, really strong conference, but it really bigs up what you have around it, and it helps and invest in all your other sports that are around football.
Absolutely. And Evan mentioned it. I was so concentrating on the home schedule that Campbell goes on the road at East Carolina and at NC State. That does not happen when you're non-scholarship. That does not happen when you don't build a team that can compete, and a couple of other big step. So football season tickets on sale now.
We're trying to decide. I'm having a baby this summer. What's her first game? Do we take her to Raleigh? Do we take her to Buies Creek for Furman week three? Do we take her to ECU? There's a lot of decisions to
make. That's right. We buried the lead, you and your lovely wife, Jenna, expecting in June. Any more details that you can or want to reveal right now?
We got 3D imaging, and this is a radio podcast, so it's tough.
Right.
But seeing your daughter for the first time in the chubby cheeks on the imaging, it makes you cry. Like, it's so crazy to think that's me, and hopefully more my wife than me, but that's us as a collective unit turning into a real child.
Yeah, it is awesome. We'll have the Father's Day podcast will be big time. You'll be new, and we'll go through all of that. But congratulations to you and Jenna coming up. You're going to be a great dad and a camel just right down the road. We'll be here. That is awesome. We teased it a little bit earlier. And so now I think we did this with Coach Mike Minter and got a lot of great comments on it. We're able to give a perspective here, which when we talk about the Kevin McGeehan era, I think, you know, you have different perspective about different coaching eras, and I think there's one in the immediacy, and it's almost better that we've had a couple of months to think about this, because I've thought about this part of the podcast a lot, and then there'll be 5 years down the road, and 10 years, and 15 years down the road. Evan and I have spent more time around the Campbell men's basketball program than anybody but the different coaches that have been here. And of course, Kevin McGeehan here being the longest. And as different coaches changed in that, it became that me and Kevin McGeehan were the oldest guys on the bus. And I had been there, been here for all 12 of his years. Evan did so much with the team as well. And then, you know, Lindell passing the torch to him, he has spent as much time with this team over the last couple years than anybody. So I think with that perspective, it's good in the way of we know all of the good stuff, and we know stuff behind the scenes that maybe people that don't see, benefit of the doubt stuff, reasons why, everything like that. We also have been around somebody for a long time. And if you've ever been around along somebody a long time, you're going to have some very good highs, and you're going to have some not so great days. You're going to have everything in between. So know that we do have a very good perspective. We do not know everything. We were not in the office every single day, but I think we can give a pretty decent perspective on this. And I will start with the facts. He was 184 and 199 in his era here, 111-70 at home, 55 wins on the road, conference-wise, 95 and 114. This, of course, just his second year he and his team in the CAA conference. But I think, and we've talked a little bit about this before, I think how he has been judged in the immediacy and what happened after this season had a lot to do with what happened in the Big South years as well. And that's kind of where we start this, the many good things and the things that maybe you look at in a different way. The bottom line before we go into all of this, whenever you have a coach that moves on, who are you going to get that's going to be quote unquote better than him? At least here in the initial hire, Campbell has won that with the national championship, with the pedigree. Campbell has won the press conference. There are as many years to come. There are many basketball games to come. There, you won't be able to judge the John Anderschick era for a while as well. But that is what first and foremost is. Campbell made a really, really good hire.
We talk about transitions and eras. The pre-McGeehan, the Robbie Lang era had its benefits. And there was a lot of development of culture. There was a lot of local interest. And I think Kevin modernized us in many ways. And the one story on Kevin. So as everyone knows, Kevin's a huge baseball fan. And I have been pressing him for years to come on one of the baseball broadcasts. Get in the truck, get in the trailer. So he comes in for one inning. I kid you not, he stayed for three. Because we chatted about baseball for so long on that broadcast. He was the happiest I'd ever seen. Kevin, outside of the realm of the court, was one of the nicest, easygoing.
Absolutely.
Could chat them about life. Like, in an industry where coaches can be jerks.
Yes.
He was not a jerk.
Yep.
Did he have his flaws? Of course. But as a normal human being, talking about his kids or talking about, he'd watch me on ESPN and be like, hey, this was great, or yada yada. Like, he was a person you could chat with in a room and he'd be great.
Yep.
You know, and sure, things on the court, there were issues, but somebody that we spent time with in Uruguay and South America, and you spent time with him in Europe, like, you could sit down and have a water with him and have a good conversation.
Yeah, I definitely got that vibe from him as far as off the court, like as a person, genuinely, you hate to see it end for him like that, kind of like the same way with a Mike Minter, you know, like a great guy that you sit down and just have a conversation with and you talk with, and it just sucks that it didn't go the way that it was supposed to, but you know that it's time, and it's one of those that's not really the easiest, you know, disconnects to make because of what he was able to bring the program into, which I ultimately think is, maybe we can change gears a little bit, but I ultimately think that was his downfall in the end. Like, he was able to modernize us to a point, and then from, you know, from maybe 2015 to 19, that worked really, really well, and then sprinkled over into 2021. But ultimately, at the end, as basketball has made a complete 360 in the last 3 years, he just wasn't able to keep up. And so I think that was, in the end, that's why you suck to see it, because it's just, if you make a few changes here and you do a few things different here, you probably have a totally different outcome.
Yeah, and you make a good point. So many things changed. Conferences changed. The COVID era of things. When you go back to all the good things during the Kevin McGeehan era, look, this was the winningest stretch of Campbell men's basketball. They have consistently not been a couple games over 500, which is what McGeehan got you every year. Are there reasons for that? They were in Carter Gym before 2008, so you really can't put much on that era other than the fact that it was amazing. Billy Lee actually won games that he did and got that team to the NCAA tournament.
On the Carter Gym, you need to watch that. Because I mean, learning about Wanda and all these coaches that went through the challenges of trying to recruit there, it speaks volumes.
I mean, that was, and that's what's going to make it hard until we have a couple of coaches win. Money was put into Campbell Athletics and basketball, and they had this new arena to recruit to. Look, you talked about Robbie Lang. Robbie Lang spent the first half of his career in Carter Gym. He spent the last half of his career in Gore Arena. And his second to last year, he had three starters on that team that he recruited, two through transfers when there wasn't a transfer portal, and one that he recruited. He had three guys that all ended up playing in the NBA G League. And one of them played in NBA exhibition games. In Eric Griffin, you have Trey Freeman, who was the conference interior, and Darren White. He was able to recruit three guys that played in the NBA G League, and then come in coach Kevin McGeehan. It took him a couple of years to get guys that came into his system, and you have got to give him and Chris Clemons all the credit for the Chris Clemons era, because look, people will say, okay, if there was a transfer portal, Chris Clemons would not have been here all 4 years. Yes, that's a fact. But remember, that was a time, even when you had to set out the best players in the Big South Conference, the players that were first team all Big South, that were first team players of the year, like Chris, they did that to get to Power Fives. A lot of them went on to some great careers, and he stayed here. Chris Clemons was wanted by NC State after his freshman year. There wasn't NIL, but there was NIL. Chris Clemons would have got money to play at NC State. So it wasn't like, we all know that Chris was a guy that liked playing with his family. But I say that because he had opportunities to go to NC State, to go to UNC. And even though you had to sit out a year, that's what a lot of people do. And he did not, because of Coach Kevin McGeehan, because of the atmosphere here at Campbell. And he went on to put Campbell on the map. And you cannot have Chris Clemons without Kevin McGeehan. Again, does Chris Clemons get the enormous amount of credit for that because he was the one that did it? Absolutely. But it was Kevin McGeehan that not only got him here, but kept him here.
And you can't get Cedric Henderson, you can't get Anthony Del Orso, and you don't get Colby Dugan.
Yeah.
All four, you don't get them without Kevin McGeehan.
Yeah.
And I think you have to give him credit enough for his eye for talent, which is why I think that him not shifting and modernizing a little bit towards the end was his downfall, because I believe the talent was there. you look at what Anthony Delorsso has been able to do at Arizona and what Sandra Kendrickson was able to do at Arizona in the last 2 years. And we saw what Colby Dugan was versus UNC and how he put the team, you know, on his back at the end of this past year. It's so interesting because you have so many guys that are that talented. And, you know, we talked about Chris Clemons earlier, a guy who played for the Houston Rockets. It may have been for select games before he got hurt, but this is a guy that was in the NBA for a short period of time. And so when you look back on that, you can't just look at the records and the seasons and go, yeah, you have to also take into account to what he was able to bring into the creek that would make this job appealing to anybody.
Absolutely.
In the end, like, the job is only appealing because of what Kevin did for 12
years. He showed that you could win here. He didn't win the trophies, the co-regular season title with Chris Clemons. And as you said, been having one of the greatest scores and all-time NCAA history, and getting that one trophy and never getting to the NCAA tournament.
And we poke holes in Kevin's resume at times, but his ability to win in March when the team was not expected to win, he had a superpower. His ability to get to four conference finals. Now, of course, everyone would love to win one, but we haven't since 92. It's not just Kevin in this search of excellence. But his ability to rally a team when their backs were against the wall, when at times there was public pressure on that staff and that
team.
He never let it hit the players. Like, he absorbed it well. He handled everything to the best he could. It wasn't an ideal last 2 to 3 years. And part of that was longevity and wanting change. But I think that's why this move was mutually beneficial for both. This had run its course. He was a great person to get us to this point. We just needed something different.
And I think public pressure and March magic is no more exemplified than that last season in the Big South, where you make the run all the way to the championship. Well, where he told us the story, they put an entirely new defense in before that Longwood game in the hotel. It's like things like that to get your guys on one accord and putting them in together. And then you're probably a minute and 43 seconds away against an Asheville team that everybody expected to dominate you from making it to the NCAA tournament. So those things like that, you have to take into account those moments because they don't happen without
them. One of the things that people bring up was during their time in the Big South. Now, look, you know, the first couple years in that, Liberty and Coastal were still in the Big South. They won the Big South tournament. And then Asheville, that has been a power as well. And then Pat Kelsey, who has proven to be a pretty good coach. He was with Winthrop for three of those championships. But when Chris Clemons was here, his junior and senior year, Radford ended up winning the tournament. Gardner-Webb ended up winning the tournament to two teams that did not have the resources, that did not have the arenas, that did not have the thing. And then Longwood in 2022, coming out of nowhere with the gym that they did and coming on to do it. I think that was it, too. It was like, Campbell winning?
That team was deemed the redeemed team.
No doubt.
Because they came up short. Yeah, they didn't necessarily reload the way people had hoped or wanted, and that team came up short of expectations. Right?
And I think you got to give credit, you know, not that this is a Big South show, but Griff was a great head coach at Longwood, too.
Absolutely.
They don't go as far without him, and he's been proven over the last few years, like, as a guy. Just if you think about that era of head coach, you know, in the Big South, you have a Pat Kelsey, you have a Kevin McGee, and you have Griff, you know, at Longwood. So it's kind of like you look at it and go, although the talent may have not been there, quote unquote, because it's a smaller Division I, low Division I, whatever you want to say in basketball, like, the coaches that came out of that conference
think the hazy media days, we talked about Tim Kraft, Ian, Mike Morrell, and Pat Kelsey. Yeah. Like, that foursome all got hired at the same time. They all had various degrees of success. And
right.
I think you're right. The loss in Clemens' senior year just kind of felt it's not even that it's the coach's fault, right? Andrew Udy gets in foul. I feel like I remember this game like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Udy gets in foul trouble. Yeah. We have a 10-point rally late. Gensler misses a game tying three with a minute left. A lot of things out of the coach's control, but that was the year. It was like, if you're going to win it, that's the year to win it.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a ghost that was just hanging around the program. Even 2 years ago, Big South final, you're up 15 with, 8 minutes left, and you lose the lead to a very good Asheville team that was much better than us.
Yeah, no doubt.
But you couldn't close the deal. And I think those moments sit in fans' minds of like, oh, we're right there. Why can't we do it?
Yeah.
And that's what I think this hire is.
he's going to be the guy tasked to get us over the edge and win one of those title games.
And it just feels like once it's like a balloon that's been waiting to pop. It's like that final release. Once it happens, you know, if it happens under Coach Andershek, like once it happens, you're going to see a fan base that has not known what to do since, you know, 92. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out, you know, in the end.
Two of the three of us at this table were not born in 92.
Hey.
I don't mean that midway, just a perspective.
Well, yeah, like 10 years away.
But damn, there's a lot of tradition that does not know about, oh, did you say 10 years?
10 years away. Oh, no,
yeah. Now I felt dated again.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you're right. You know, through this Campbell golden era of sports, which happened back in the Big South and now getting to the CAA, the one thing that's missing is one of the basketball teams going to the NCAA tournament. And again, I like what you said early on, because of what Coach Kevin McGeehan did and the resources that were put into basketball and the emphasis. And there is too many people to mention. It's building Gore Arena. It's building things up. It's all the administration. This made this a job where you can hire someone like Andershek, which would hopefully take this team to the next level. It's going to be fun to watch. There's a lot of excitement around it. And of course, schedules will kind of start leaking out this summer. Remember the CAA, because of the TV deals, you don't get the full schedule till the end of August, but we will definitely update you.
Well, we have basketball schedules end of August now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so saying that. Generous. Just giving a little bit of a tease.
I sure hope they can deliver on the goods. Hey, so I work a lot of games around different conferences. The American Conference this year set a schedule and a week later had to redo the schedule because they double booked Tulsa at two different places as the road team. So I will say the CAA, when they get it out, it's right. Yeah. You don't have to worry about a second schedule.
Yep, no doubt. Well, hey, thanks for humoring us. That was a lot of fun. That was an hour on this podcast. We will be more consistent next year, I promise. We'll have lots of dad stories with Evan as well. Remember, all summer we'll still have content right here. Tales from the Creek. Stan Cole just keeps getting some of the Hall of Famers, some of the best and brightest from Campbell Athletics history, and there is a lot of great stuff there, so make sure you go back and do it. We'll have some stuff with Coach John Andershek, Campbell's new head men's basketball coach, coming up in a week or two right here on the podcast as well. But thanks for spending some time with us. Thanks for all of your support this season. With Evan Budrovich and Lindell Suggs, I'm Chris Haymeyer saying so long. Go Camels.